some people who think about the life's review, which everyone will eventually have, they think, oh, this is going to be really excruciating. This was going to be embarrassing. I'm going to be ashamed. But what they always get from the life's review with Jesus is, I love you. What did you learn from that?
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Thanks for listening to In Good Faith. Today is a topic that has fascinated me since I was a teenager. 1979, reading Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life. So first hearing those words, near-death experience, which I had never heard before. Heather Bigley in studio with me, our senior producer. Glad you're here. Also, Josh Orton.
Howdy.
And today is the first of a little mini-series we're doing with people who have studied or associated with people who have experienced death, including a hospice chaplain, an Episcopal bishop. And then we have a panel of a gerontologist, so end-of-life nursing study, a pastor from here in the area, as well as a Hindu practitioner from India, to talk about different viewpoints and experiences with end-of-life. When did you first hear, Josh, because you're of a whole other generation, about near-death experiences? Do you even remember?
I'm pretty sure I was watching Oprah with my mom at some point, and someone had a near-death experience. I think that's probably the first time.
Thanks, Oprah, for being our guru to all things sort of out of the normal religious experience.
Shout out to Oprah, always.
I have to say, I'm a little like Martin Tanner at the beginning of this. Like, when people have talked about these things, I've been like, okay, sure. I don't know if I have felt really uncomfortable about it or if I just, and I don't know what the discomfort would be about, but
when, I know what mine was.
I know when you proposed this, I was like, okay, sure.
Well, I remember reading some other books and I thought, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, but is this, quote, official, unquote? I wanted some higher religious authority to say, yes, we should listen to the interesting things, or these guys are crackpots. I wanted sort of black and white. Yeah. I've come to just say, this is this person's experience, and I can just listen to it.
And some of them are incredibly beautiful.
Now, Martin Tenner is the co-founder of the Utah chapter of IANS. That's the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And he's also the host of Religion Today on KSL Radio.
One of the great things about Martin Tanner's interview is the fact that we're shooting on a new set, and you can go to YouTube and see the extended interview and see Steve and Martin having this chat.
Yes, we often have to edit for time, but it's cool to put the video out there. Go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@in-good-faith. So he was skeptical. He is and was then a believer, but he was a skeptic. That's how he started out.
So by this time, I had a radio show on KSL, and so I started to interview people who had had near-death experiences. And they sounded credible, but again, I wasn't necessarily able to rule them out as being some kind of a dream or hallucination or something, although they started to sound credible to me. But there were a few that just sort of pushed me over the edge. One was a little girl who had drowned in a swimming pool in Pocatello, Idaho. Crystal was her name. She couldn't swim. She was bumped in by some bigger kids running by the deep end. They inadvertently bumped her and she fell in and she drowned. And nobody found her until the pool closed and the pool was cleared. And there's this little lifeless 7-year-old girl on the bottom of the pool. And fortunately, a pediatrician, Dr. Morse, was at the pool and worked on her and became her attending physician. Paramedics came. She was in a coma for 3 days. She woke up. And Dr. Morse, who was sort of an agnostic Jewish guy, and so the nurses came back, Dr. Morse, Crystal woke up, and he runs in and talks to her and says, so what happened? Expecting to hear this story about, well, I got pushed into the pool, and her response was, oh, you mean when I went to heaven and met Heavenly Father and sat on Jesus' lap, and here's this non-believing guy. That's a really interesting story. Tell me about it, Crystal. And so she launches off into it and talks about seeing little kids and playing with them, and they were waiting to be born, and about things that Jesus had shown her that were going on in her family, which I was later able to verify with her parents, which made me more of a believer.
So things were happening like at their house, not where she was.
While she was in a coma, Jesus took her to her house trying to convince her to go back because her life wasn't done. And she saw her father crying while reading the paper. Her little brother was really sad. Her mother was crying while she was making soup for dinner. And she saw all this. And her parents later said, yeah, that was true. And finally, Jesus said to little Crystal, well, would you like to go back? Oh, no, I'm not going back. I like it here. I really like it here in heaven. And then Jesus, no doubt being the ultimate psychologist, you ask the right question, you get the right answer, says, well, wouldn't you like to see your mother again and your dad again? Yeah, I really would. Zip, she was back into her body, and she woke up. And as I thought about that, I thought, there is no way someone would come up with a story like this for notoriety, for a book, for any other purpose. Make some little 7-year-old kid the center of it who probably couldn't keep the story straight, you know, three times in a row if it were made up. And yet she did. Every time she told the story, it was the same. It was vivid. That pushed me over the edge to a real believer that these are genuine.
So about 650 different accounts and interviews. So
yes.
At some point, you've started to say, here's what's different about this one, but here are commonalities as well. And can you kind of walk us
through that? I can. Bruce Grayson, who's an emeritus professor of medicine at University of Virginia, first came up with a little list of criteria for near-death experiences. And they're typically someone is dying or in an accident or close to death. They often come out of their body, feel a ringing in their ears, and feel like they come through the crown of their head. They go through a tunnel, or in the alternative, they see deceased family members, and then they learn something, and they return. And you have these short 6 or 7 points, but after a while, there have been different people who have come up with enough near-death experiences so that there have been other points that added. My current version is about 36 different points that happen often enough, so I think they're not anomalies.
Is there always a visit with deity, or is it sometimes people they know or a messenger they don't know, or do people have these and meet no one?
All of the above. The analogy I use with some people is this would be a little bit like 100 people visiting France for a short period of time, because a near-death experience is always fairly short. 100 people could go and come back, and they would all have a little bit different description of what happened, but there would be commonalities too.
Yeah.
And so not everybody feels themselves coming out of their body. Often someone will look down and see their body below, but not everyone. Some experience the tunnel and deity. Many experience a life's review, not little kids, but adults. Yep, they go through and see every little bit of their life in excruciating detail, often, but not always.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, we all can have some things in our life that are in the uh-oh context.
I would imagine that if I was trying to discount these, or even being neutral, and let's consider both sides, I might say, well, yeah, that's what they were taught in Sunday school. But do you have cases where people haven't grown up in a religious environment, but then interpret that? Or do people from different traditions have different experiences?
People have to, by definition, interpret their near-death experience based on their own life experience. I mean, how else could you do it? You can't interpret it through somebody else's life experience.
Yeah,
you have to, you know, little kids interpret them somewhat different from adults. Most Muslims, for example, if they see a being of light, it can't be Allah. It's the angel Gabriel, because God is not seeable, so they automatically interpret the being of light as the angel Gabriel. You have other people from different cultures flavoring their experience through their own religious and economic and country of origin background, mm-hmm. but there are also commonalities. And so it's easy to identify them, and they happen in every country, in every culture. Some of the most interesting ones, to get to your second question, are people who are not religious. Mm-hmm. A great guy named David Herard in Pennsylvania, and he didn't have such a happy home life, but he also had two friends that were killed in drive-by shootings in Pittsburgh. So it was a rough time for him. And he, when he finished high school, signed up for the Vietnam War because, and this is his phrase, not mine, he was so angry he wanted to go shoot people and not go to jail. Hmm. He was a complete atheist. He wound up in Vietnam. He was in a really bad spot with his platoon with the Tet Offensive, and the Vietnamese were coming with great, huge numbers, and his group were running out of ammunition and afraid to leave their foxholes to try to get more. And he finally said, forget this, I don't care. And he ran out of his foxhole and went to the ammo dump and got a whole bunch and ran it back, and everybody's cheering, and he brings it all back to different foxholes and resupplies them all. And on his fifth or sixth trip, a rocket landed next to him and just peppered him with shrapnel. Mm. He was really bad, and he died. And he saw Jesus, who he didn't previously believe in, and it changed his life. He said Jesus loved him more than he could have imagined. He said, everybody knows that your mom loves you. Everybody knows that your dad loves you. He loved me 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times more than that. It was almost more than I could comprehend. Mm. And he came back a changed guy. He was no longer angry or bitter, and he changed his life direction. And after he got back, eventually wound up as a paramedic going out to try to save other lives. He was a terrific guy.
Episode 78 of In Good Faith, Jeff Olson, a
Jeff
friend of
Olson.
Yours.
Yeah, Jeff's a great
he
guy.
He shares his harrowing, I mean, what an experience with a car accident and losing some family members, but also what he learned then and subsequently in some other experiences.
Yeah, which is a great topic. People wonder, you know, if there is a God, and I absolutely believe from these that of course there is, and it reinforces my religious faith anyway, but what do people learn in these near-death experiences about life that might help everyone? And of course, the most interesting one is nobody fears death who's actually had one of these experiences. They might be afraid to go through the short time of pain or agony if it's an accident to get there. But the actual dying part of it, they think that's great. They kind of look forward to it.
Like the little girl that you talked about at the beginning,
yes.
It was just a continuation of something.
That's right. Once you get to the other side, it's really nice. You kind of don't want to come back. The other point of it is most people feel a sense of urgency. They have this intense desire that life's really important, it's really valuable, it's hard, it's difficult. It's like going to school, more like going to boot camp. It's really, mm-hmm. really tough, but you got to accomplish a lot because it's a limited time period. So they have this sense of urgency.
So they feel that there are things to accomplish.
Yes.
Like that's why they had to come back in some cases.
Yes.
There are lessons. What are the lessons?
That they need to acquire knowledge. I mm-hmm. always think if you learn more, it will be to your benefit. Mm-hmm. But the most important one, the single most important one, is to learn to love, to learn to love like Jesus. George Ritchie, who was a very devout Presbyterian, when he had his near-death experience, he got double pneumonia. He was told, stand up, you are in the presence of the Son of God. And he just knew that's Jesus. Mm. He felt this overwhelming love, just like I described with David Herard earlier. And that's a commonality. And everyone says who experiences that love, the greatest good is to learn to love like Jesus. And the second greatest good is to learn, to acquire knowledge. And that's it. If you do those things in life, everything else will fall into place.
Yeah. Are there, because this is studied by people of many different denominations with slightly different views and slightly different teachings about some of the details of what we expect to see, are there things that surprise everyone that don't really fit with anyone's theology?
Yes. I don't think anyone is going to go to the other side and say, yep, I had it all pegged. Everybody's going to be surprised. I don't care who you are. You're never going to have it all figured out. But there are some people who are surprised about certain things. One of them is some people who think, and we talked a little bit earlier about the life's review, which everyone will eventually have. They think, oh, this is going to be really excruciating. This was going to be embarrassing. I'm going to be ashamed. But what they always get from the life's review with Jesus isn't, you idiot, what did you do? It is instead, I love you. What did you learn from that? Hmm. And so, as Latter-day Saints have this, for there must needs be opposition in all things. Right. Well, that means we're going to trip and fall. Horrible things are going to happen. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to do things you really wish you hadn't. It isn't you're condemned for that. It's did you change direction, which is sort of the real meaning of repent, and what did you learn from it? That's, I think, the ultimate purpose of memory is to remember good things and then to learn from the good and the bad.
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back with more in a moment. Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here, host of In Good Faith. Here's another podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts I hope you'll check out. What I Love is Real. You know that saying, real recognize real? That's Lisa on The Lisa Show. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian, she's a believer, a single mother, and on The Lisa Show podcast, you'll hear from the Council of Moms, a genius idea, which is actually one of my favorite parts of her show. And you'll hear about the challenges of life, parenting, mental health questions, social issues. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but also from people discussing their where the rubber meets the road life experience. It's The Lisa Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith. I'm speaking with Martin Tanner about a lifetime of interviewing people who've had near-death experiences.
It seems like, and I remember reading Raymond Moody's book where he talked about some people who felt like they'd had a really bad experience, like they were sort of brought up short, like, uh-oh, I really was headed the wrong way. Is that a minority?
It is, but that's a fascinating question. A lot of people, including Moody, have originally talked about those in terms of negative near-death experiences. Ultimately, every so-called negative near-death experience is a positive one because people changed their life because of it. Mm. One that really was negative that turned him around is Howard Storm. I first met Howard Storm in 1989, I believe it was. And he had been, prior to his near-death experience, a self-described atheist, married, but kind of a carouser and take advantage of people and do a few drugs here and there. He was an art professor. He just was kind of very self-centered and in it for himself, as he would readily tell you if he were sitting right here with us. And when he was conducting a student tour to Europe, he collapsed on the sidewalk. And he, unbeknownst to him, had a perforated ulcer, and the bad stuff in your intestines was leaking into his chest cavity, and it was not good. And he was rushed to a hospital, but they couldn't find a doctor on a Friday when this happened to help him out. His wife came over and he got worse and worse and worse, and they still couldn't find somebody. And he just knew that he was going to die. And finally, he did. His spirit left his body. He sees his body laying there. And instead of the typical light and a tunnel and love of God and seeing family, he was just kind of standing there. And he said he felt all alone. And he tried to yell and talk to his wife and medical personnel who would come in. And no one would listen to him or even acknowledge him. He, of course, he's just a spirit. It's pretty hard to get someone's attention when you're in that form. So finally, after some period of time, these sort of bad guys, as he described them, started to appear. And there was this dark corridor that opens up on the side of his hospital room. And they said, Howard, you know, come with us. And he started to go with them. And he somehow thought he was still in the hospital, just going down some corridor, because he didn't believe in an afterlife after death. And so he still thought somehow he was in the hospital, but he kept going farther and farther. And pretty soon he realized, I'm not in the hospital anymore. I'm dead. And by then he was with a great crowd of evil beings, as he describes them, who proceeded to yell at him and scream obscenities and accost him. And I won't go into all the details, but it was really, really bad. Mm-hmm. He thought to himself, as he's in the midst of this, this is something really horrible. I don't like this. I have to get out. And he thought back to his little youth days in church, where he had been singing songs about Jesus. The idea popped into his head, if I'm dead and I'm still here and there are all these really bad people, well, maybe there really are good people somewhere else and maybe there really is a Jesus. Mm. So he thought, I need to pray. But he didn't know how anymore. He'd forgotten. So he starts saying things like, in God we trust, one nation under God, indivisible with liberty. I love God. In God we, and he'd sort of repeat all this stuff. He didn't know what to say. But the evil people who were with him were even more enraged as he started to pray. They did not like that, but they backed up and Jesus came down and took him out of that place. And he had this overwhelming sense of love, and he had an extraordinary experience, and it changed his life. From atheist art professor, came back and became a Unitarian minister and ran a soup kitchen and helped all kinds of poor people, kind of a turned into a Mother Teresa. Now, the downside to that is that his wife left him. From his perspective, turned his kids against him, and he was very much alone. So he paid a heavy price for following Jesus. But he's one of the kindest, most gentle, good people I know.
Martin, you've alluded several times to something confirming your faith, or you being skeptical but hopeful. If we can be personal here for a minute.
Of course.
Because you decided to do this in-depth study and speak to so many people, how has it affected your faith, your belief?
It's been a great confirming thing. Most people have faith because they've learned things secondhand, or they've read second or third hand accounts of people. Sometimes they base their belief in Jesus, and this is a wonderful thing, you know, on the New Testament or on the Book of Mormon or on personal prayer or something else. But I feel particularly blessed to have talked to, as you mentioned, way over 600 people, a pretty huge percentage of them who have actually seen and interacted with Jesus or God or both. And so I've heard firsthand accounts of them and what they are like over and over and over and over again. And that's been very reassuring to me.
That was Steve talking to Martin Tanner, host of Religion Today on KSL Radio. One of the things that I really liked about Martin Tanner was that people are learning things from these near-death experiences. It's not like they just come out of it the same person, but that they learn that they should continue to learn and that they learn that they should love. And he says, love like Jesus, but I think that applies to, you know, every religious tradition, love like the divine.
So here is someone coming from a Latter-day Saint perspective, grew up in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and most of the people he's interviewed have had a very Christian experience. That was their upbringing. Although he did talk about people from other faiths interpreting things and what this loving being was according to what they had learned. And not so much that we should be worried about our end-of-life review on the big screen with everyone eating popcorn right. and going, oh, him too. But
well, I mean, and that was a facet of my childhood. I don't know about you, but I know I felt my mom hit really hard. One day, everyone will know, shouted from the rooftops, unless you repent. And then it was like, then the magic marker will come and cover up all those things or erase them or something. Mm-hmm. And so to hear this, I actually was really touched and relieved.
Yeah, just the, not so much that what did you learn from your experiences, both good and bad, difficult as well. So why do this little end-of-life mini-series, which includes this near-death experience episode? Part of it, I think, Heather, is just none of us are going to get out of this life alive.
Yes, and I think as you get older, this is something you become more familiar with, the death of your friends, the death of your family. I used to make a joke that in my 40s, I got really good at sending flowers because there were so many of my friends whose parents were dying or there were siblings that were dying. And I have to say, to attend a funeral of someone who's lived a good long life, it is a beautiful, uplifting experience for me. And it's spiritual.
I have felt sometimes whether there was a birth or a wedding or a death, like, these are the milepost moments. There may be others, but those are times when I've just had this overwhelming feeling like this is real life right here.
Yeah. And so we have this mini series. We're going to talk in the next two interviews about what that process is like for family and for the person dying.
Because if you're prepared, whether you're the family or the person, it can be easier.
Yeah, easier. I don't think it's easy.
Not easy.
But yeah. It's I think you go into it feeling prepared in a way that you might not have before.
Yeah, and then we'll end the series with kind of a roundtable discussion from people of different faith traditions talking about what their outlook is and how they talk to the people of their faith tradition about the process of dying and looking ahead to another life. Many thanks to Martin Tanner and Mariana Bari for speaking with us. Our episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, and Josh Orton. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, Lauren Sandberg, and Ashton Parkinson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a comment or review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and help spread the word. By the way, we do Instagram Lives, and we always let you know before these go live, so follow us on Instagram at In Good Faith Podcast. It's sort of a fun way that is not a full interview, but you can see what we're up to. Actually, we're usually on the roof of the building with beautiful mountain scenery behind us, so we hope you'll check that out. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.